The mics are hot. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is the lovely, the perfect, my best friend, Anna.
Aw, you just have to say that because it's Valentine's Day.
Nah, I'd say it every day. We will be your hosts for the podcast. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you in your table. But we're not doing that today, because it's Valentine's Day.
Woo-hoo.
Today, we will be looking at how to create a fun and engaging gaming date night with tabletop games. All right, ready?
Yeah. Do you want to say a little bit about why we decided to do this first? Or I can?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, we were trying to think of something special to do for you all for Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I know usually when it's Jared and I, we are reviewing two-player games. And often that's because we are playing two-player games on date nights together. And so it seemed kind of special to just talk with you guys a little bit about date night, because we've connected with several other couples that enjoy playing games for date night. And if you are not currently dating or with someone, then feel free to use this just as an opportunity to get to know some of our favorite two-player games that you can play with another friend.
That's right. Valentine's Day is all about love.
That's
that
right.
Love can be through couples. It can be through friends. It can be loving your grandma.
And teaching her to love games.
That's right. Maybe she's teaching you how to love games.
There you go.
So I hope you find this episode fun and helpful. And we'll just kind of see how it goes, because we're going to have this be a little bit more of just a discussion of how we like to go through a, I guess, an almost ideal date night that involves gaming. We understand this won't work exactly for everyone. Everyone's tastes are a little bit different, but we're hoping that with getting a little insight into how we like to do things, that you'll be able to pick up at least a few tips that you can implement in your gaming nights.
Definitely, because we did not get to the place we are quickly, I would say. Do you remember how we started?
Dating, or?
Well, hopefully you remember that, especially since it's Valentine's Day. You know,
yes,
it's important.
I do remember how we started dating.
No, I mean how we started out trying to game together for date nights.
I don't actually remember how we started that, so I'm curious what you're about to say.
Well, so I grew up in a family that played a lot of board games for family night.
Yes.
And you grew up playing more video games.
Right.
And so when you get married, you want to try to explore each other's interests, and so I bought you a video game that we were going to play together. It was a two-player video game. And we were going to play it together, and I was like, this is going to be a super fun date night because we can play video games together.
Yeah. I didn't realize you were talking about video games. I can never forget this memory because
it
opened
ahead.
My
you
eyes
can,
to so many things.
You can say it then.
No, I want you to tell it. You go ahead, because you'll probably tell it in a more even keel way than I can.
Yeah, so this was before we had really gotten deep into board gaming. In fact, I would say getting into gaming stemmed out of this experience. That's why I said this is how it all started.
Yes, I will say that is mostly true. I always have to give credit to Josh Taylor for showing us Catan. I know that you had already experienced Catan.
Yes. I had played at the English's house when I was in college.
Yeah. But it opened up a whole new world when I don't know what it was about it that just drove me down this deep well. But regardless,
yes. So I wanted a special date night that would build off of things that you enjoy, that would help me explore and learn to love things that you enjoy. So I got you Borderlands, which is a two-player video game for, I don't know, I think it was for like a Valentine's Day or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, yeah. So we sit down to play Borderlands, and I'm so excited, but I've never played video games. Well, okay, I've played computer, like some PC games, not a lot, and I've played just your basic Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like Pokemon, basically.
And the computer games that you played were more puzzle-based.
Yes.
Nothing with...
There was not a fighting aspect to
them. Hand-eye coordination
yes.
was not required in the video games that you've played.
Right, right. So and that was the problem.
Picked up a first-person shooter.
Yeah, picked up a first-person shooter, and I don't know, man, there were two things, and one of the things moved you, and one of the things oriented you,
joysticks.
And I just...
Yeah.
Joysticks, yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
They're supposed to bring you joy.
They did not. I had no idea what I was doing any of the time. Jared kept on being like, no, go left, no, go right. And I don't know my rights and lefts, unfortunately, automatically. And so...
Yo, that was the most infuriating part. Like, I was so patient with everything.
No,
until
I
couldn't...
Patient.
I could... Like, I was screaming... Okay, as a seasoned veteran Halo player, I knew how to screen watch. And so I was watching her screen, probably more than I was watching my own, trying to help guide her through the map. And
yeah, he was like, just follow me, but I couldn't follow him because all I could see was the sky. I don't know why I couldn't.
Oh, that's so true.
Look down for some reason.
You gave me the true joy of realizing that.
Was it a joy?
It was
really
hilarious. It truly was to watch you look straight up and just spin around in a circle. I thought that was only like an internet goof thing. I didn't think that actually happened.
Wow. And you just got to see it in real life.
It blew my mind
during a date night with your wife.
But that very difficult experience has birthed something incredible.
It's true. It really has, because we got done with that very first time of playing Borderlands together, and Jared put down the controller and he said, I never want to do that again. That was one of the most stressful experiences of my life. And I said, no, I can get better. I can learn. And he goes, no, I want our date nights to be fun and relaxing and connecting. And I was just so stressed that whole time. And so that was that. We ended our video game date nights right then and there and started exploring other ways of gaming together, which has blossomed into this beautiful board game hobby that we both share and we both love and we both get to be good at.
That's right. Absolutely. No, I think it's been great. And we have really had to learn over the years how to be really good, even at preparing a streamlined and very fun date night so that we can both focus on each other and the game, and one doesn't necessarily trump the other. It's a really nice blend that we've figured out. And so that's kind of some of what we're going to be talking about here tonight. So when we're talking about a good tabletop gaming date night, we're going to go through some steps, and so I hope that this is something that somewhere along the way we drop a nugget that you're like, oh, that's a great idea, and that you can try it on your next date night or your next friend night or whatever it may be. So as with all good experiences or get-togethers, there's preparation that's involved, okay? So Anna, why don't you kick us off here talking about some of the preparation things?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd say this is true of any get-together. This is true when I'm going to have a friend over. This is true for any date night that we would. I plan ahead so that everything can go well. And so planning ahead for us looks like thinking ahead of time, what might we want to do? We plan, we dress up like we're going to a date. We brush our teeth like we would before we go to a date. Smell nice like we would before going on a date, because we don't want to treat this just like another everyday night at home. We want to treat it like a special connection night like we would if we went out on a date.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to dress up. Like sometimes we do like coordinated casual clothes or pajamas or whatever if we decide that's the vibe we want to go for.
It's true. I mean, where else can you wear your coordinated pajamas on a date?
It's true.
So, you know, definitely.
We need more places like that.
Yeah, we really do.
But yeah, definitely good hygiene. I also think we've had a lot of fun with planning drinks and snacks ahead of time. In the same way that you would plan, okay, am I going to go to a restaurant? Are we going to cook dinner? You know, we still do that. And a lot of times, if we decide what kind of game we're going to play, so for example, if we were to play viticulture, which is all about managing vineyards and making wine. I will make sure that we've picked up a nice bottle of wine for Anna, and I will pick something else because I don't like wine. But we might have grapes or cheese and crackers or something else to go along with the theme of the game, which actually, it really adds to the ambiance of the evening.
It's true. It feels a lot more fun to be playing a game about managing a vineyard or making wine when you've got your wine and your charcuterie board that you're munching on alongside of it.
That's right. And along with that, actually, we don't have this in the notes that we're looking at, but adding a little bit of background music also really helps with that.
Oh, that's true.
Because especially when you get into a game where you got to think a little bit and you have that downtime, you still got the really nice music playing in the background to add to just the flavor of the evening. So it definitely adds to that.
Yeah. And planning drinks and snacks ahead of time is fun for the connection to make it feel more like a date. And it's fun to theme those with the games that we're playing. It's also important to plan ahead of time, though, because you're a little bit picky about what people eat around games. Or maybe you're not too picky.
No.
But it's important to be a little bit picky because you can't eat super messy things when you're every other turn managing board game pieces.
We don't do hot wings at the gaming table.
We do not.
I will admit to that. But I'm not a, like, hardcore stickler, no food at the table kind of thing. I just don't like the super greasy or the super powdery cheese puffs or things like that. But as long as everyone's got a napkin and it's nothing too crazy, I'm usually pretty okay with it. Because for me, hosting the event at the table is more important than keeping the game in 100% pristine condition.
And I'd say another thing to plan, in fact, probably one of the most important things to plan, is it's really good if you learn the game ahead of time. So that can be done a couple of ways. Maybe one of you can learn the game ahead of time and teach it to the other person. We've done that before.
Yep.
There's a lot of games that have how to plays on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to, you know, just exchange instructions and sit there and read, you can look up a how to play blank, whatever game you're going to play. And there's usually YouTube.
There's a plethora of people that are doing how to play videos at this point.
Yeah. And you can usually get one that's not too long. Like I'd say maybe 15, 20 minutes is pretty normal to find. That explains every single rule that's in the rules. And so if you find a how to play video, you guys both watch it during the day. Actually, that's kind of fun because sometimes we'll have a new game that we're trying out, and Jared's usually the ones that will find how to play videos because he's pretty good at filtering through and knowing which people are kind of do a good job explaining the ones that we like for how to plays.
Yeah.
And so he'll send me a how to play video halfway through the day, and it's this fun little, oh, fun, I get to prepare for our date night. And so I'll watch the how to play, he will too. And then we come to the table, and we're not struggling through rules, which kind of puts a damper on the start of the night. We're both coming eager to play, having already learned the rules.
Yeah, the very last thing that you want to do is have everything come to a screeching halt because you have to have one person sitting there reading the rules and the other person's twiddling their thumb or they're jumping on their phone or whatever it may be.
And then they eat the whole charcuterie board and there's none left for the person that's reading the rules.
It's a disaster.
It's sad, yeah.
No, this is a personal rule that I have for myself across the board, not just in a two-player night. This is almost every game night that I host, I will pick games that I am prepared to teach or that we already have a good understanding of because you really want that flow to keep going. And to me, it has never been worth it to start a new game raw with nobody having any experience inside the rule book or any understanding of what's going on with it. I just think it takes too much extra time to really get a good feel for it. I'll list a couple. We list a how to play for each game that we review. We do shuffle it up from time to time, depending on the game. I will say Rodney over at Watch It Played is cream of the crop.
Excellent.
He is very thorough. You will never miss a rule with any of Rodney's videos, so we recommend him a lot. But
you can watch him on like 1.5 speed, too. He talks
100%. 100%. And his videos do tend to be on a little bit closer to the 20-minute side because of the fact that he's very thorough. But Anna's correct. Rodney talks slow, so if you do 1.5, 1.75, you will still feel like you're talking to a normal human being as you listen to him. Rules Girl is another one. She gets through rules videos in less than 5 minutes, typically. And I have a couple more that I'm going to list in the show notes as well, just so that as you're searching for people, you know kind of which ones are more thorough and which ones are probably not as good, depending on how accurate they are with all of their rules. And I will say, too, like, I understand that no one likes learning the rules to a game, but just think about it. Like, if you're going to take someone dancing, you're going to practice dancing. If you're going to take someone to go do some activity or to go play a sport or whatever, or to like sing a song or whatever, like, you're going to practice all those things. And learning the rules is like leading up to that experience. So I understand that it feels different in board gaming, but I think there's still value in doing that ahead of time for sure.
I'm over here laughing at myself because definitely approximately 2 months ago, I took Jared to a curling bar for a date night and we hadn't researched curling ahead of time and it wasn't a great experience. So I don't,
I'm just saying, you just
don't recommend that. Definitely do your research ahead of time.
That's right. All right. One more thing on preparation. I know we're emphasizing it a lot, but I think it's very important for the rest of the evening. You are not locked into staying at home when you do gaming on a date night. I love taking a game with me to go for us to play either at the restaurant while we're waiting for food, or if we're going to be waiting in line somewhere, I might bring a pack of cards or a small card game or something of that nature.
Or we'll do Ticket to Ride on our apps, on our phones.
That's right.
Sometimes,
yeah.
If
using
we're out
app
somewhere.
Games, absolutely. So there's all kinds of ways to incorporate gaming into part of your date night. Just making sure, of course, that it will travel well, as we talk about in most of our two player games.
So I want to talk about the next section. So
go,
we talked
for it.
About preparation, but another really important part is connection, because any date night, that's what you're going for, is you're going for connection.
That's right.
And I wanted to put this in here because I talk to couples sometimes where maybe one person is a little bit more into gaming than the other, or more than that, maybe one person is a little bit more into a certain type of game than the other person. And they get excited about having a game night with their partner, and so they want to play all these games that they want to play. But if it's a date night, you really need to be picking games that you both want to play so that both of you are happy at the end of the night, so both of you feel connected at the end of the night. This isn't a chance to just do whatever you want to do. You need to explore together and see what you both want to do.
I completely agree, and I have found that especially if you're bringing someone new into the hobby or someone that you really hope would love gaming.
Like your grandma.
Like your grandma. You don't throw Terraforming Mars or Twilight Imperium at your grandma. Ooh. And expect her to just jump right in. You got to ease people in with lighter, easier to understand games. And then as they have a good experience with that, then they'll want more. And you give them a little more at a time, just a little taste. And then as you keep going, they're going to like it more and more. And then eventually they're going to want to play all the games that you want to play. But I have found that if you try and rush people, they get overwhelmed and they are like, I'm not going to do that. So I just think that if you are a heavy gamer and you want your friend or your spouse or your grandma or whoever to jump in, just remember, you got to take it slow, be patient. They will get there because it is a great hobby. I'm with you. I want to play Terraforming Mars all the time too. I get it. But you got to be able to go at their pace.
Yeah. And I know we just talked about preparing ahead of time and knowing the rules and planning for what game you're going to play, but it's really important to pivot too.
That's
and
right.
So we have had several nights where we know tonight's going to be a date night. It's exciting. But then the kids don't go to bed quite as easily as we hoped that they would. Or one of us is a little bit more tired than we thought that we would be. And it's important at that point in time to recognize the needs of your partner, or to recognize the fact that your partner has to wake up at 6 a.m. the next day and we just don't have time for this big 2-hour game that we plan to play. And to be willing to pivot, because it's more about connection than it is about getting a certain number of games or a certain type of game under your belt for the night.
Yeah, or even, you know, you might have decided that you're going to try a new game and you both watch the How to Play ahead of time, and you're all excited for it, and you get about halfway through and you're like, wow, this game's terrible. And it might not be terrible for everybody, but for the two of you, it's terrible. And so for us, we decide, okay, well, we're not having any fun here. It is our date night. So let's just put the game away. We can either pivot to a different game that we know how to jump into easily or whatever. But don't, I mean, some people do this and I don't understand it. If the story in a book is terrible and you're not enjoying it, stop reading. Put it down. Go read a book that you like. Don't just keep reading for the sake of reading it. In the same way, you don't have to do that with games. Like, there's tens of thousands of games out there. And I've found multiple games where I was told that this game is awesome. It's one of the best out there. Blah, 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 blah. But then I got into it and I was like, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it. And so I just think there's a lot out there for people to try, and there's no reason to beat your head against the wall over something that's supposed to be fun.
Yeah, we had an example of something that happened really recently, actually, where we got the game Spirit Island, which is highly rated game. Many people love it.
The best co-op ever.
It's a cooperative game, right? And so we were both really excited to try it out, but we got through...
three turns.
I was going to say, and it wasn't really going very well. And both of us were like, you know, I think we might like this game under different circumstances, but tonight is just not the night to get kicked in the teeth by a co-op game. And especially a brand new one where we're still having to look up rules every now and then and that kind of thing. And so we decided, hey, we'll save Spirit Island for another night when we feel more in the mood for something like that. And we switched to a different game.
Yep. Now, I mean, to be fair, I've tried Spirit Island like 6 times. I don't know if I want to try Spirit Island again.
You didn't tell me that.
Yeah, we've tried it. I mean, you and I have tried it before, too, in the past. But it
was, that's true. Yeah.
It's just never been a good experience for me.
I think it's just difficult.
Maybe. So, yes. So, preparation, connection, knowing when to toss all your preparation out the window, because that's how life works
because
sometimes.
Because connection is more important.
That's right. So, we've talked about planning for what games you're going to play. I think it's important to think about and consider what kind of game you might want to play. I know that when we're doing date night, when it's just the two of us, I tend to lean towards doing cooperative games instead of competitive games. Nobody likes being on a date, beating the brains out of their partner, and then expecting their partner to just be in a great mood the rest of the night. I mean, that, at least for us people that are competitive, that can be a little bit rough. But I will say there are competitive games that we do like. There's a lot of cooperative games that we like. We're just going to go through some of these and go through a couple different game types.
And for people that are new to the hobby, when Jared talks about cooperative games, he's talking about the two of you are working as if you're on the same team against some sort of problem that the game throws at you.
Yeah.
And so that's why, I mean, you could still lose and feel bad at the end of it, but you're doing it together. It's not one person winning and the other person losing. Whereas competitive games, there's one person winning and the other person is losing. So some of our favorite cooperative games that we like to play, we've got Fox in the Forest Duet.
It's like a trick-taking game, kind of like Spades or something like that, but you're playing just the two of you together. And there's a interesting puzzle going on where this particular tile around the board, and the way you do that is based on who wins the trick. And so you're working together. You can't talk about it during the game, but you're using those cooperative skills to be able to get the piece where it needs to go.
Yeah, and it was really fun to come across Fox and the Forest, in case you think I'm saying in the forest. Fox and the Forest Duet, because we had played the actual Fox in the Forest, yeah, which is a competitive trick-taking game, which was really fun.
Also two-player.
Right, but it was very cool to find this idea of a trick-taking game where it could actually be cooperative. So that was a really unique thing. We were happy to stumble across that. Another one that I enjoy is Codenames Duet.
No, we both enjoy this. We just don't like playing it together.
I like playing it with Jared. But apparently it has taught us that we think incredibly differently from each other.
So in
Codenames, there's a grid of different words out, and you're trying to, and there, you have the knowledge of certain words in this grid that you're trying to get your partner to guess which words you have on your little hidden grid. And they've got a little hidden grid on their own side of which words they're trying to get you to guess. But you can only say one word. And the way that it works is you don't have enough turns to say one word for every single word. And so you're trying to kind of combine words together. So for example, I could say the word sand because I was trying to get him to guess beach, which is made out of sand, right? Or maybe box, sand, box. And I think, okay, sand will get him to guess beach and box. So we'll get two out of there, right? But that doesn't ever work for Jared and I. We always get kicked by this game when we are trying to play cooperatively because apparently we think very, very differently from each other.
Our brains are very different. And it's very interesting, and it actually works very well in most areas of life. But we do have a tendency to get very...
You have a tendency to get very frustrated with this game.
That's not true.
I think it's a cool challenge because when you play Codenames Duet... For those of you that are used to the bigger game, you're on teams and you're going against each other in the bigger game. But in Codenames Duet, you each have a set of words you're trying to get the other person to guess.
It's a great design.
And if you do it, and you've only got a certain number of turns to do it in, and if you do it in a certain number of turns, then you beat the level in a certain city. There's a map that you're going through, and then you can choose to go to the next city, which has kind of a different challenge. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's I love the game itself, and I think that you get more frustrated than you're willing to admit, but that's okay. Some of the other ones that we really like, Pandemic is a game where you're working together to try to save the world against a virus that is spreading, four viruses in fact that are spreading.
Yep.
There's a variety of different game series that simulate an escape room. Our favorite is the Unlock series. It works with a deck of cards and an app on your phone, and you're trying to solve this puzzle, and it works very much like an escape room. The Exit series also works really well for that. We've really enjoyed both of those. And in a little bit different but similar way, Chronicles of Crime is a kind of a part board game, part app-driven, figure out who done it kind of game, where you're working together to try and figure out the clues and solve the crime that they present to you. You'll use the app to look at different crime scenes and go to different places and interview people. It's pretty cool. So those are some of our cooperative games that we really like. And then, Anna, you want to talk about some of our competitive games?
Yeah, so some of our competitive games that we've enjoyed playing are, I got Jared for Valentine's Day a couple of years ago, actually, Paris, La Cité de la Lumière, which is a game where you're laying down tiles to build a city in Paris, and then you get to add different types of aesthetics, and you get to add lights and light it all up at the end and see who has a beautiful city. And then in a similar vein, we enjoy playing Tenpenny Parks, which doesn't have to be a two-player game, but it plays well as a two-player game, where you are building roller coasters.
Yep, and we have talked about Tenpenny Parks in the past, Ian and I have, so if you're interested in hearing more about that one, then you can check out that review. And some of these we will review in the future. I think they merit, and some of the other games we're going to list merit their own review episode, but we wanted to go ahead and get several of these out there just to kind of give you some options to think about. So after kind of deciding if we're going to be cooperative, work together, or if we're going to compete against one another, then we decide whether we're going to focus on a more light, medium, or heavy game. Now, this has kind of two things to it in my mind as far as what each of these things mean. So on the one hand, light, medium, heavy is focusing on how difficult of a game it is to learn. Okay. I also add a little bit more to that of how much thinking you're going to be doing in the game itself. So Pass Tally is a good example of, it's pretty light as far as learning the rules, but you're going to be sitting there possibly head in hands at times trying to map out all the different possibilities and figuring out what you want to do.
It's true. You're going to be setting a timer for your partner.
That's
being
right.
Like, you've already been thinking for 5 minutes. You've got to lay down a tile.
It's true. And so for me, even though I would say rules-wise it's a light game, I bump it up to a medium so that, you know, we kind of have a more accurate description of the game itself. And, you know, sometimes we'll mix. We'll have a medium game, and we might have a light game on either side of it just to kind of give a appetizer, main course, and then dessert kind of functionality of the different games. So some light games that we play, we've talked about Sky Team before.
Yep. That's another one of our episodes if you want to check that one out. Pretty light game. You can play it pretty quickly, and it doesn't require a ton of thinking because you're rolling the dice each turn, and so you've only got that much to work with, basically. Another light one that we like is a mushroom collecting game that I think is super fun called Morels. Or Morels, maybe?
Morels, yes.
Morels.
I mean, you're the mushroom person, so you would know better than I would.
I only read them. I don't pronounce them.
But no, this is one of those games where we have taken a passion outside of board gaming that Anna really likes in foraging for various items, mushrooms being a primary one of those things, and found a game that involves them. And we try to find several games like that that kind of emulate some of our other passions. And it's a fun game to play, and it's very light. It doesn't require too much thinking, and we have a good time with that one. Anna, you can talk to some of these other medium level games because I think that you really enjoy both of these a lot.
Yeah, and I'd say a lot of times I will voice a preference for a medium leveled game because I love, love, love some of our heavier games. But again, when you're doing a date night, so typically we do our date night sometime during the week and you've got to wake up for work or whatever else the next morning and you don't have as much time. Mm-hmm. And so playing a medium game can feel really connecting, like I invested a lot and I still, you know, am not waking up all groggy the next morning. So anyway, some of the medium games that we like are Isle of Cats. That's a super fun game where you're exploring an island that has a ton of cats and you're collecting them and you're laying them down almost Tetris style in a boat that you've got, trying to fill your boat with as many different kinds of cats as possible and treasure and such like that. And then another one that we really like is Wingspan. I think y'all have an episode of Wingspan, so yep. That's one that people can check out.
That's right.
If they'd like to learn more about Wingspan, it's a phenomenal game, beautiful artwork. It's about collecting different kinds of birds. And so you're collecting birds, but you've also got to have the resources to feed them and you've got to have the eggs. And so it's one of those kind of kingdom building type games where you're building up your birds and then you score points at the end. Isle of Cats is this way as well. Then you score points at the end for how good your boat of cats or or grid of birds is, and whoever scores the most points at the end wins.
Absolutely. And then the last category in this section is the heavy games, which I really like to bring out when it's a more dedicated date night. The kids are off at grandparents' house, or we don't have to worry about waking up the next morning because it's a special holiday or whatever it may be. And that lets us dedicate more time to these games that we don't get to get out as much. But because it's two of us, the game will go a little bit faster and we can really dive into these heavier titles. So for me, Ark Nova is one of those heavier games that I really enjoy playing it too. It doesn't take more time than it has to at two players, and I still feel like I'm getting a full game of it. And another one for me is a two-player specific game, which is Star Wars Rebellion, which is essentially the original trilogy of Star Wars in a box.
It's very well done.
It's incredible. It's one of those games that we found at a convention one time, and it was one of the few times that we sat down, learned the rules and played, and I had no regrets because I was just so thrilled to be playing this game.
I think we learned the rules and played it twice. Even.
Yeah, I mean, I think we dedicated.
It was
most
like the whole afternoon
yeah,
doing
it
that.
Was,
yeah,
it was great. And then you have a couple of heavier games on here too.
Yeah, for sure. So one of my favorite heavier games is Through the Ages. This game just takes a very, very long time. I think the last time we played with three people, it took about 6 hours. So
sorry,
just
James.
Be prepared as you are, if you're breaking out this game. But it's a beautiful game. It's a game about history. You're a civilization and you're building your civilization from, you know, just sticks and stones all the way up through the modern era. If you've ever played the computer game Civilization, it's basically like a board game version of that. And it's one of my favorite games. I love playing it. And then the other heavy game that we will break out, and doesn't quite take 6 hours, but it does take a good chunk of time and it takes a lot of thinking, is Terraforming Mars. And I think we're going to do a podcast on Terraforming Mars sometime in the near future, so maybe stay tuned for that.
Yeah, definitely this year. I'm not sure what time, but we will definitely do it this year.
But that Terraforming Mars is my number one game right now. I think it is incredibly well done. The science in it is just so fascinating. If you're interested or you've looked into how the science behind how we would terraform a planet, this game does it very, very well, and it is very fun to play. Well,
big,
and also the
brain.
Game was created by a, you know, doctor of
That's
physics
right.
and a doctorate in chemistry.
Yep.
So I think they tried to do the science correctly.
Absolutely, for sure. Most of those games that we just listed off are competitive games, with the exception of Sky Team. But all those in that kind of section were competitive. And one thing to think about, if you're going to go competitive, one other thing to consider is, do you want it to be something that's more direct conflict, like a game that directly focuses on player versus player combat or something of that nature? Or you could pick something that's less direct but still engaging. So, for example, Cascadia is a game where you're both building out your own tableau of different animals and you're kind of putting together your own thing. There's some player interaction, but it's not a fully... there's not direct conflict in a way that makes you kind of feel like you're butting heads. So just something to think about. Sometimes we like being directly competitive, and sometimes we don't. So it just kind of depends on what you're going for that night.
Yeah, and I know Jared said earlier that he likes to pick cooperative games for date nights, and I'd say I tend to like the games where you're doing your own thing, but then you're still competing with each other at your score at the end. So some of your worker placement games are like that. Some of your world building games are like that. Games like Ticket to Ride, which we didn't mention, but we love playing for date night.
Ticket to Ride is perfect.
Yeah, Ticket to Ride has some excellent games that are actually designed specifically for two players. So you can play Ticket to Ride, or two or three, I think, right?
Well, it's still 2 to 4, but it's in that more like 15 to 20 minute range instead of a full hour. They're the smaller boxes. So there's Ticket to Ride New York, San Francisco, London. And I think they also have either Amsterdam or Germany or something like that. That's a small box as well.
Yeah. So we enjoy the bigger Ticket to Rides, but it's nice that we can get out a Ticket to Ride game and play it in 15 minutes as well if we want to. So that's always a fun one. Yeah. So what Jared was saying about the less direct engagement when you're doing your own thing, but then just comparing your score at the end, versus more intense engagement would be where you're just head-to-head duking it out. Like, what was that other Star Wars game you tried to get me into where we both had characters when we were playing down cards and directly attacking each other's characters?
Yeah, Star Wars Destiny.
It was fine.
It was great, but Fantasy Flight screwed it up, and so became a disaster.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
didn't realize I was bringing back trauma for you.
It's a sad time, but that's okay. It's all good. So,
but there's been several of those where you're directly attacking another player that we have played, but... again, we tend for the slightly less conflict-centered for our day night, usually.
That's right. There are games that are specifically designed for two players. We've talked about Patchwork before. Great game.
Wonderful.
Absolutely recommend. Seven Wonders Duel is... so Seven Wonders is a game that plays 1 to 7 people. Seven Wonders Duel is a two-player specific. There's other ones like that. Splendor Duel is specifically two players. I think there's one for the networks that's a two-player game. So they take a lot of these like regular games and then boil them down to a two-player game as a way of making it easier for that two-player experience. I think those are kind of hit or miss. I enjoy Seven Wonders way more than I do Seven Wonders Duel.
Agreed.
So I would say there are definitely... don't shy away from picking the fuller games to be your two-player game for the night. So, for example... Viticulture, which we mentioned earlier, I think that game is great at two. I think you get a different experience at higher player counts, but I think it still plays great at two. Another one is Decorum, where your roommates trying to decorate your house together, and
that one's fun. Yeah,
there's all these different conflicts, and you're trying to work through that. I think that game's great. I don't know that I would enjoy that game with more than two people.
It'd be difficult to manage it with more than two people, I feel like.
For sure, yes. And then sometimes we play games that give us a challenge. So Damage Report is a game that's been in our collection for a long time. It's a real-time cooperative, and when I say real-time, like you're playing with a clock, and you're moving things around in real-time to try and fix this spaceship that you're on before everything blows up. And with two people... it's really difficult because there's a lot of ship to cover and there's only two of you. And so that's sometimes something that we like to play as well.
Yeah.
So I think there's games like Patchwork that are great for strictly two players, but I think that a lot of games nowadays do an excellent job of getting to that two-player count in the ways that they play.
Agreed. And I know you said earlier, Splendor Duel. I mean, we don't have Splendor Duel, but we enjoy playing Splendor just with two people.
That's right.
I would put Sagrada also in that category. That's a game about building stained glass windows. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. And it plays wonderfully with two people and feels very satisfying not having a higher player count.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have themed games as well. So these are things that focus on, like we talked about earlier, some things that we really like. Anna is in love with Buffy. And so we have...
No, I'm in love with you, sweetheart.
Well, that's true too. But we have multiple Buffy games that we like to play. And another one that I'm trying to get Anna more into, but it's more direct conflict, is Lorcana, the Disney game that we've talked about. We'll probably do a follow-up episode on that sometime this year too, because we've gotten a chance to play a little bit more than we had before. We've got our hands on some cards now. But another one that's a little bit different is sometimes we like to do games that are focused on, they're themed, but they like have a campaign built into them. A game that we're going to be probably starting soon is called Deliverance, where you're angels trying to protect a city from demons in the way that they're...
We're trying to protect the saints.
Well, that's what I was getting to, is that they're you're trying to protect these saints that are in the city. And yeah, you go through like this full-on dungeon crawl as these angels, which sounds pretty cool. So we're going to try that out. And there's some others that we've tried in the past as well. So having that, you know, it's not D&D, but it has that kind of story aspect to it, is a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, it's true. There have been some really fun story games that we've played through where the story builds on itself too,
mm-hmm.
which has been fun to play. So
for sure.
Yeah.
So speaking of D&D, you can play D&D at two players.
We have done it.
Many times. In fact, Anna is DMing a two-player game for she and I right now. And
yep.
We're in the middle of a story. And you can add on sidekicks to make it feel like there's a more full party. Or you can just, you know, be the solo hero if that's what you want to. The lone wolf, if you will. But I really think
that... Jared's not the lone wolf. He literally adopts every single NPC that we come across in the campaign.
It's almost required.
I have to remember so many different voices. It's very confusing.
My favorite is when I get her into a conversation with herself and I'm just watching.
Yes, that has happened.
But no, I think it's a really fun, and it really feels safe as a way of trying D&D, because you don't have the pressure of all these other people around the table. It's just you and the person you're closest with at the table trying this thing out. Anna, I think that you would say that you've gotten a lot of DM experience through our two-player games.
Yes, yes, definitely. And I'll also say D&D feels special because whoever's DMing has to prepare for the other person. So the other person doesn't have to prepare as much, but whoever's DMing does have to prepare. They've got to get all of their story in line, all their characters in line, and if they want to be super fancy, any, you know, props or pictures or music to go along with it. And so that can feel like a really special treat for the other person, almost like when somebody else says, hey, I'm going to plan an extra special date night and it's a surprise. That's kind of what D&D feels like to us, because usually we're both prepping for date night, but with D&D, one person is prepping everything and kind of giving that gift to the other person.
Yep, for sure. No, I completely agree. And I've really enjoyed having an opportunity to play in your campaign and to be able to venture forth as a player, and then vice versa, you know, being able to DM for you as well. It's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed that. So I know we're coming up on time. Is there anything else? And I feel like, you know, 45 minutes in, we've barely scraped the possibilities of gaming and including in a date night. There's just so many games out there. It's hard to list them all. We've had a lot of great experiences, but do you have anything else that you want to add as we kind of wrap up here?
Yeah, I'll just say, I mean, I agree with you. We've kind of barely scratched the surface of the things that you could do for a date night, but we wanted this episode to be just kind of a lot of maybe name dropping, for lack of a better word, so that as you're fleshing out your game collection or your game night, you've got a lot of options to choose from. Well, I would say one of the categories we didn't explore a lot is some people really like party games. So party games are ones that Jared and I do not do as much of. We've got a whole shelf dedicated to party games in our game library. But party games are a great game sometimes for a date night, because party games are more focused around the social aspect of the game as opposed to the technical aspect of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so some games like Munchkin, which is loosely like you're battling each other, but it's also just kind of really funny. And I don't know, what are some other ones you'd throw in there, babe, that would be good for two players?
I think that
who would like more party game oriented.
Yeah,
people.
So I think we really enjoy Concept as a two player game.
Oh yeah, that's a phenomenal one.
So Concept is one person is the clue giver and the other one's trying to figure out what's going on. And so basically the clue giver has either a person, place, or thing that they're trying to get you to guess. There's a variety of different things on the board that they can highlight, and you're trying to see how fast you can guess what it is. Another one, it's kind of a party game. You and I have played a couple of different card games, The Mind and Hanabi.
Oh, yes. Those are so challenging with two players. It's really fun to play those.
So The Mind is a simple card game with just a deck of cards from 1 to 100, and you're trying to get your cards in the correct order from lowest to highest. You're only using the cards in your hand. So you'll go through a variety of levels. Level 1, you're only going to have 1 card each. Level 2, 2 cards each, blah, blah, blah. But you can't talk. And so you have to, and I know it sounds weird, like everyone gives me this sideways look every time I describe it, but then once they start playing, they get it, and it's this really interesting game. Hanabi is a very interesting game that goes with the same concept of you can't talk, and, well, you can, but you can only give specific information, but you can't see your hand. You can see everybody else's hand of cards. And you're trying to give these clues to get people to play these firework cards down in the correct order. And those are both very challenging at two, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. So even though, and there's other party games that we've played, but those are some that we've enjoyed that particularly play well with two people, because with two people, you're not going to be able to necessarily break out Werewolf or Apples to Apples, or some of the more classic party games that require a lot of people. But if you've got a partner that enjoys party games and likes the more social deduction or social interaction as opposed to the strategy type games, there's still options for you for date night.
Completely agree. I think one more kind of genre that I think is worth touching on, because it happens a lot in date night, whether for us or we've heard other couples talking about it, the Zen games.
Oh, that's so true.
I feel like really make it into date night a lot.
We have some couples that are like, oh yeah, we only play the games that are building gardens and trees and things like that because they're so relaxing for our date night.
That's right. Yeah, I'm like looking over your shoulder and I'm like, oh yeah, there's Takinoko, which is all about taking care of a panda and you're competing who can do that best. Or there's Lotus, where you're literally just building flowers. Yep. There's the parks, where you're going through a park. Or Arboretum, where you're building a tree of or a forest of trees.
What's the one where you're actually building trees and the cards lay out like branches? That one was super zen.
Oh, Kodama.
And yeah, and then you add stuff.
Yep,
yeah, that
that's
one's
right.
Super zen too.
Yep, so lots of very zen games where you're competing, but it's super chill. I would even say it's a different category from the everyone's kind of doing their own thing, because there's direct interaction, but it's almost like, man, we're just all here to have a good time, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, man, we're just all making something beautiful and it's so fun.
That's right. So I definitely would recommend looking into those kinds of games as well.
So anyway, I hope we haven't necessarily overwhelmed you as we've just name dropped all these games. Hopefully you can kind of pick, hey, I like this category, or hey, this one sounds fun to expand into. And honestly, guys, we didn't start with, you know, all of these games under our belt either. We started with games that were a lot simpler in their rules. I remember at the start, we would play tons of Boggle or Set or Corkle.
Rummy Cube.
Yeah. So there's games that maybe if you want a little bit less of a learning curve, a little bit simpler rule set, but you just want to enjoy playing games together, you can go back to some of those classics and it's still a fun game night.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with introducing someone new. Start easy, just dip your toe in, and then gradually work your way up, and it gets less and less scary as you go. All right, well, I think it's time to wrap this up. If you're still listening at this point, or if you've listened at any point during the episode, thank you so much for checking this out. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I completely get it. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on BoardGameGeek or join our Discord. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. All of these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art and to Anna Snyder who made the music. Join us next week as Anna, Julia, Ian, and myself give our thoughts on the full campaign of Ticket to Ride Legacy, Legends of the West. We have finally beaten it. And by beaten it, we have completed it.
It has beaten us.
Oh, that is so true. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Goodbye, and happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, Grandma.